The big names, the big games. We get you the story inside the cave. 96.5 The Cave.
With that, we welcome you back inside the cave, 96.5 FM, 965thecave.com. It's time to talk some Michigan State football, and on the phone lines with us, he's with 24/7 Sports. We welcome back Stephen Brooks. How are we doing, Stephen?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, no problem. Okay, so I will start by saying this. Last Saturday could have been worse, and I thought it was going to be. What were your initial takeaways following the Maryland game?
I think I was there with you. I thought, you know, that's a bad matchup for Michigan State, just given Maryland's, proficiency throwing the ball, and we all know that that's Michigan State's biggest weakness right now is trying to stop high-level passing games. So, yeah, I was thinking it could be a much bigger spread than what it ended up. I thought there were some moments of improvement, you know, some things, some moments that looked good. You know, the offense in the first half looked better than it has in a while. And then, the defense comes up with a couple moments. They had a goal line stand late in the game. But it was just, once again, you know, they're not playing a full 60 minutes, and they're not playing the complimentary football that Mel Tucker talks about ad nauseum, you know, that being, you know, offense helping special teams helping offense helping defense, et cetera, you know. They're not putting all three phases together consistently, and this was obviously another example of that. As I mentioned, you know, the offense looked pretty good. They match them with that first touchdown. They get in position, but then their offense is doing their part. Then you've got a missed field goal, a blocked field goal, a missed PAT. So that's not complimentary football. And then you come out in the second half and go punt, 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 punt on their first four drives, and they net 5 yards, I believe it was, on those first four drives. So, you know, as you said, it wasn't as bad maybe as everybody, as some folks at least might have predicted. I thought there were some decent things from the secondary, you know, in terms of not getting totally just ripped apart, you know, start to finish. But obviously not good enough, and now, you know, they've lost three in a row for the first time under Mel Tucker.
Are the problems defensively masking, like, a big issue on offense? Like, are we not talking about the struggles of Peyton Thorne and the run game enough? Like, is it all on the defense, or can we blame the offense now a little bit?
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I think it's just it's a lack of complementary football. It's not either side. You know, it's at some point something's always going wrong. This team's never clicking in every phase all at the same time, and that's a problem. And that's what that's one of the many things that worked so well last year is that they always sort of had each other's back. You know, Nebraska. You know, they need something to happen. Boom, Jaden Reed returns a punt. There's your special teams component, and then Chester Kimbrough picks off the pass in overtime. There's your defense backing you up. You know, the Miami game, forcing turnovers, capitalizing on those turnovers. Indiana, you know, a pick six late seals it. And so there were a lot of different things, but that was one of them last year that really propelled this team, was that those units did back each other up and they did play complementary football. So, yeah, you know, the offense I don't think has ever been blame-free in this. I mean, the way that the inability to run the ball – and they were obviously better against Maryland with 100 yards on the ground there, but they didn't meet that the last two games combined, you know, against Washington and Minnesota. So when you can't do that, I mean, it's hard to do everything on offense. It's hard to call plays if you're Jay Johnson. It's hard to play quarterback if you're Peyton Thorne. It's obviously hard to run the ball when you know for these backs when you're averaging less than a yard before contact. You know, so everything can sort of crumble underneath the offensive line play. I mean, honestly, that they're getting just the blocking in general, whether that's tight ends, backs blocking on blitzes and passing downs, things like that. The protection and the run blocking just hasn't been up to par. So, I think that's definitely a major contributing factor of everything we've seen so far.
Stephen, John Roberts here. You know, looking at the stats from the Maryland game, seems like a little better effort against the ground game of the Terrapins, but still the same issues in the secondary. Any talk of possible personnel changes, maybe some tweaks to the scheme that you're hearing?
So they did make one sort of move coming into this game. They started freshman Jaden Mangum at free safety and then moved their normal free safety, Angelo Gross, down to nickelback. And so that's kind of interesting because Gross really, for a year and a half now, has been starting at free safety and it just hasn't really clicked for him there, But as a true freshman, he stepped in and played that nickelback spot for him and was pretty good, It looked like he had a really promising future there. And then just with how their roster panned out, they needed him to shift to free safety there down the line. But that's a really hard position to play. Mel Tucker, Scotty Hazel, anybody will tell you that's a demanding position, that nickelback spot, because you do have – you are closer to the line of scrimmage. You do have some run responsibilities. You do have to get your hands dirty in the run game there. But also, you're guarding, some of the opponents, typically best weapons is right there in the slot, whether it's sort of a speedy, shifty guy, like a Tavon Austin type, or whether it's a big tight end split out the way Michigan State does and puts their tight end in the slot there pretty often. So you got to cover a lot of different skill sets and body types. You got to be physical in the run game. There's a lot on that player's plate. And so I say all that to say, Gross is back there. And I thought he had a decent game. We'll have to see long-term whether that's what they want to do. And Xavier Henderson being out, too, throws a wrench in all of this. So I think there's a chance he could be back this week. I haven't heard that for sure yet, but I know that around this time was sort of the initial diagnosis for him. Hopefully I have a clear answer. I wish I had something better for you guys right now, but maybe by the end of the week I'll have a firm answer on what it's looking like for Henderson. So they've started Jaden Mangum, who's a four-star recruit coming in, one of the top players in Michigan out of Birmingham Groves, and he early enrolled, and this was always kind of the plan, is that they always thought he was a guy who could be fast-tracked into the playing group, not necessarily a starting role, but certainly into the playing group. And then Henderson's injury played a factor there, so he's getting more than his feet wet now, and especially if he starts against Ohio State. I mean, these are two incredibly difficult, couldn't be two harder matchups for a freshman defensive back back-to-back in the Big Ten against these two passing games of Maryland and Ohio State if he gets that second straight call. Beyond that, I don't know if there really would be any. I don't know if they have many other moves to make. Maybe Ronald Williams starts. I thought Amir Speed had a rough day at corner last week, to be blunt. So maybe Ronald Williams steps back in there. But other than that, they kind of have that top. Their two deep kind of is what it is, and everybody below that just really has no real experience. They'd be kind of gambling at that point. And in terms of scheme changes and everything, I mean, I thought they did some new things. Out at Maryland, they did play some more 4-3. They continue to play a little bit more man. I thought they blitzed a little, or they pressured a little bit more. And they do seem to be switching things up a little bit, but, at a certain point, you just have to execute out there, too.
Yeah, well, you anticipated my follow-up question really well. I was going to ask you on a timeline for Xavier Henderson. Ian and I talked before the season, and I just felt he was a real key. And even projected that he's a guy that could possibly, find himself on some All-American lists if he had a great season. And obviously not having him back there in the secondary has been a real problem for the Spartans so far. So getting him back would be good news. He's a big part, I think, of their defensive plan for this year.
Definitely. And I feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's one of my favorite players to cover. Just because he doesn't BS you, he'll be honest about what he's got going on, what the team's got going on. He shoots you straight because he's been around the block, and he has no need for games or anything. So I really appreciate X. And he had gotten himself into really good shape, I thought, too. Mm-hmm. I thought, he probably was poised to have a really nice year just because he trimmed down a little bit further. And I know that sort of speed and agility, athleticism was something he was trying to work on, to get himself to the next level. I thought, physically in the weight room and everything, it looked like he'd put himself in that position. So I had heard a couple weeks ago that this game was sort of circled as a possible return. Again, I don't have an update yet, so I don't know if it's still holding true. But it's definitely this month, I would assume, unless there's been, unless there's been another setback that I'm unaware of. But the interesting thing with him is they brought him on the Maryland trip last week, and he was out there in a big knee brace, a big leg, you know, lower leg, knee area type of brace thing. And they don't usually bring injured guys. Like, there was no way he was going to play in that game. You think, you know, a couple weeks back out of Washington, Jaden Reed didn't play in that game. They left him at home.
Right.
But this time they brought Xavier Henderson out there. You know, I think that has something to do with what I just talked about, Jaden Mangum, a true freshman starting his first game. I think they wanted him there for that. And as you said, just, you know, his leadership, his presence. You know, I asked Mel Tucker about it afterwards. That's basically what he said, is like, he's a veteran guy who's played a lot of football for us, and if we could have him here, it was going to be a good thing for us. So I thought that was really, really interesting, because you just don't see that.
Sure.
We're talking with Stephen Brooks from 24/7 Sports, our Spartan insider here inside the cave. Stephen, from last week to this week, I think we're getting less questions about, you know, Mel Tucker from the public. You know, after you go out and lose to Washington and Minnesota the way they did, people started talking some nonsense about Mel Tucker. In my mind, it was nonsense. But has that kind of simmered down a little bit after the Maryland game?
Oh, I don't think so, necessarily. I mean,
all right. No, you're right there. That's why we have.
And be prepared for it to hit overdrive this week, because, look, I'd be stunned, guys, if Michigan State's within three touchdowns of Ohio State.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this is going to be a bloodbath, quite honestly. Again, you know, just like last year, maybe a little bit better, you know, maybe a little bit. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, I think it's going to be a similar beat down to last year. So the Mel Tucker $95 million jokes and this and that, those are all going to be on overdrive this weekend. But look, I mean, I think that's a lazy sort of, you know, immature way of looking at it for right now, just because he was never being paid for, like, what this program is or even what he is today as a coach. It was always about what it could be, and the early signs that he showed, the confidence that he instilled in the administration, of course, and the booster ranks, the fan base, the recruiting world. Like, it was always like a advance payment almost of, like, we're paying you to win titles later now, you know? That's sure. Always what it was. And if you look at, you have to be able to separate, I think, I don't think it's that hard to do, to be honest, but to separate this team, this individual season, from the bigger picture of what he's doing. I don't know if I mentioned it with you guys. I mentioned it a lot, though. Like, if you just would have said, and now look, I picked them to go 8-4 this year. And let's say they turn this thing around and still end up there, or even close, 6, 7, 8 wins, somewhere like that. If you just zoom out and said, in year three of a rebuild, a coach is going to win 6, 7, 8 games, you'd go, okay. You'd go, you know, at most places that aren't your LSUs, Alabamas, USCs and everything, you would say, okay, that's a normal year three of a rebuild. The problem is last year was such an outlier, and not that anybody would ever trade that in or anything, but it skewed the expectations, it skewed perceptions. It's, for some people, it wrongly skewed the timeline, you know, of where this program actually was. I'll tell you guys a story. You know, last year they beat Penn State in that regular season finale at home in the big snow globe game.
Yes.
And that got them to 10 wins. And I got a text that night from somebody inside the building and said, I cannot believe we just won 10 games with this roster. Just to give you guys an idea. You know,
sure.
This was never a finished product. They didn't just add water, snap their fingers, and boom, Michigan State was back. No, I mean, they had a transcendent player. They had a couple other NFL guys. And they won every close game, every coin flip game, they won it. As I mentioned, those, that Nebraska, Indiana, the Peach Bowl, on and on and on. Michigan, they come back. You know, every close game, every adverse situation, they found a way. So that was just sort of lightning in a bottle. Well, I'm not saying it was fake, but it was a very unique lightning in a bottle situation. This is still not a program that's built to compete for the top of the Big Ten. So all that to say is a long-winded way of saying, like, there's a difference between this season and the long-term arc of the program that Mel Tucker has this place. As a thing headed right now, he's got, I think, 10 still four-star commitments, which if they all sign would be more than any of them Mark Antonio ever signed. You know, there's very clear and obvious 2024 class, two classes away from now, already has two commitments. They're both four-star, top 200 players in the country. So there's very much evidence that that he is getting this thing in the right direction. That it's still not up to par, you know, with in terms of where he wants it right now. And you can look back as well and say, you know, this year three for him is where the last of the previous coaching staff's recruiting classes are really going to be bubbling up to the top as juniors and seniors and things like that. And the last of the previous coaching staff's recruiting classes weren't very good. You know, most of those guys are in the MAC right now or FCS or lower. You know, and some of them that are still hanging around are just, you know, they're just okay players, but they don't have the depth necessarily to be a real legitimate type of contender. And so 11-2 skewed everything, but I think it's easy to sort of be reasonable and look past some things and see that long term, I don't think there's any reason for panic right now if you're a Michigan State fan.
Well, I'm just going to blame Kenneth Walker and leave it at that. Okay?
That's fair.
All right.
Yeah, no, that's totally
we'll
fair.
Do that. Yeah, he was the guy. John, you looked like you had another question.
Well, no, I just Steven mentioned a little bit ago 3 touchdowns. If they can, the line's 26.5 now. So if you're a Michigan State better, you'll take 3 touchdowns. Is the difference?
True. I wouldn't. I mean, I'm trying to be nice, guys.
Ohio State's a phenomenal team.
Yeah.
And just like Maryland, they're built to stick the knife in the wound and twist mm-hmm. it and, you know, move it all around and make it really painful. Unfortunately, so. This might be one of those weekends you go up north or whatever, you go whatever you do, you know, get the lawn ready, start raking leaves, you know, and come back next week for the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, Steven, I'm glad we get to talk to you, but we've picked a couple terrible weeks to start this thing with Maryland, Minnesota, and now Ohio State. But we certainly appreciate your time today. We look forward to doing this next week. I'll send you a text to get things squared away, but thanks for your insight. We do appreciate it.
Definitely. No, yeah, I appreciate it. It's always fun jumping on here. So talk to you guys next week.
All right, thanks.
Sounds good. And once again, that's Steven Brooks with 24/7 Sports, our Spartan insider inside the cave. It feels kind of dirty, Wolverine fans, huh? Talking to Michigan State, that's okay.